This is Bill Minchin from Asteroid, Redeemer, Final Axe, Rev 7, Titanic, Planet 8, Subdued, Saxum Sanctus, The Seventh Power, Mention, Blues Metal Trance, and anything else you can think of, and you're listening to Power Rock Podcast with Jim Madonna. Crank it all the way up and just a little bit more.
Everyone, Jim Madonna here, your host of Power Rock Podcast. I would like to welcome you all to yet another episode, bringing you the best interviews from around the globe, from indie to mainstream, whether it be rock, metal, heavy metal, speed metal, contemporary, melodic rock. We got it all. And friends, today I am so excited for today's show because I have on the line singer, songwriter, vocalist, and guitarist, Mr. Bill Minchin. Bill, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Bill, I got to say, man, that this is truly an honor to have this opportunity to take your time out of your busy schedule and spend it with me to do this interview. You know, I've been a huge fan of yours for a long time. And, man, I the Seventh Power, with all these projects that you have, man, they are just so tight, and I absolutely love it. Truly, again, I thank you.
Well, hey, thanks, Jim, and I'm really flattered by that intro there. And, I'm always happy anytime somebody's tuning into anything that I've done. So I'm really appreciative of this opportunity.
Bill, you know, why don't we get started and, and how you got started in doing all this? The floor is yours.
Okay. I was born in 1960 and I was reborn in 1980. And, I didn't grow up in a religious environment, per se, like a lot of people do. Kind of grew up out in the sticks in California, just kind of a loner type of guy. I was an only child for about 10 years, and, I kind of grew up outside of society, which probably, maybe in the long run, might have been a good thing for me. I might have been, if I'd have grown up in the city, I probably got caught up in everything that everybody else did. And, after I got saved in 1980, I was going to Greg Laurie's church from 1980 and actually all the way until 1993. I went, when you get saved, you gotta bone up on the Bible. In my case, it was a book that I had never even read, and I'd never set foot in any kind of a religious institution, a church, or anything my whole life until 20. And I grew up, I spent about, 10 years out in the sticks, but I spent 10 years in Southern California, in the city, so you think I would have picked up on a lot of things, but I had to go to what I call boot camp for about 5 years, and it was probably a good thing, that was, when I first got saved, the first Diaper record didn't come out for 3 years, and I was wondering, hey, can I continue to play the guitar as a Christian, because so many that play this instrument the way that I play it, with the kind of amplification that I use, they don't make real wholesome edification albums, to put it mildly. And I thought, it's just a whole realm that I, and here's the guy, I'm 20 and I have no religious upbringing. I don't have any idea. Can I do this or not? I didn't really know any straightforward Christians. So, getting this whole thing started out of the gate was kind of tricky for me. And, some of my friends were close to me, oh, Bill, that's a God-given talent. But, some of them weren't saved. They were saying that. So I'm like, I got to take that with a grain of salt. But eventually I especially, I think when the Yellow and Black Attack came out, I saw it the year after that. Somebody said, hey, check this out. Have you heard of this group? And I was like, no kidding, huh? And I saw the way they were dressed, and the music was nice and loud and everything. It was nice and everything that you want for heavy metal. And I thought, well, there's some guys that are doing it straightforward. This is pretty convincing here, And in 1985, I was playing in just a local band. Ironically, the guy was in the band all had Christian upbringings and stuff, but it wasn't really a Christian band. It was playing covers and stuff. And, I informed him. I said, I think our band's kind of run its course, and I'm going to do something else. And I started Redeemer, put out a really super budget album on cassette tape only. It didn't sound very good. Probably one of the, from a lot of technical standpoints, the worst album I've ever made. But, got my foot in the door. And what the really strange thing was, the first concert that we played in that band was, there was a concert called Unity 86, and it was a local thing in Redlands, California, where they were, it was a Redland type of guidance clinic, a guy that basically helps get kids in high school off of drugs and keep them that way. He was throwing this huge all-day bash. For some reason, they wanted us to headline it. We totally weren't worthy. We had some green musicians in the band. And you know, we went out, went on at about 11 o'clock at night. We were dead tired by that time when we hit the stage, and people were filing out already. And you know, just a few things happened on stage. We couldn't hear and stuff. It was pretty loud. And I just, I remember going off stage feeling about the worst that I had ever felt after getting done rocking in front of a group of people. You know, I went home and we just sat there for about a week or so, and I was just kind of in a huff, just thinking, man, this is hard. You know, I had been in, you know, I played a lot of secular shows and bars and stuff, and I guess I probably wasn't fully prepared for, you know, what could spiritual battle be like. What, you know, as a Christian, you go into one of these same venues that you played before, are things going to be different? You know, I didn't know anything. I just thought, well, I'm going to go out and rock for Jesus. Who knows what's going to happen? Anyways, about a week and a half later, my cousin called me up, Bruce mentioned. He says, hey, man, what's going on? I said, oh, you know, I'm hanging out. And he says, you know, I've been talking to a couple guys in my band, you know, we're thinking about their concert a few weeks ago. And, you know, Bruce wasn't a Christian at the time. And he's like, you know, I think that's pretty cool, man, what you're doing and stuff. And we're kind of talking over, and our whole band wants to believe in the Lord and start playing Christian music. And I was like, wow. I was kind of shocked. And what I found out over the next month, a couple of other bands had people in that I'd known before. Three bands got saved out of one show. And I was just stunned. God showed me a lot of lessons right there. First of all, he's shown me it doesn't have anything to do with how good you sound. You know, if you're going on stage, for me, I'm powering it and I'll make things happen. You know, it's not up to you guys to rock people into heaven. And because it certainly was not a good show for us. I mean, it had its moments, but it had a lot of bad moments. And so that was my first show out of the box as a Christian, and it wasn't really much of a show, but it incredibly bore some pretty good fruit right out of the gate, you know. And so that I kind of got a flying start off of that. It really energized me, and I was kind of stoked, you know. And things happened slowly for a couple of years after that, but eventually we ended up playing a lot of shows with Redeemer between 86 and 89, but that's kind of how I got my start there. It was rough, but it didn't feel triumphant, but I guess the way that God saw it in the end, it was.
Right. Did you ever at any point throughout your career, maybe even up till date, just get discouraged, you know, because a lot of people think that, you know, when they, you know, invite Christ into their life, that everything's just going to be, you know, all hunky-dory. And, you know, that's just really, it's not true. But have you ever gotten to a point in your career where, you know, you've gotten discouraged and you really maybe at a point decided, you know what, this is not the route I want to take? Has that even entered your mind at one point? Or if you did go through it, how did you handle it?
You know, as I pointed out there, actually, believe it or not, after the very first concert, I was a bit discouraged, you know, and there wasn't any other things happening, and our bass player left not too long after that, and there was discouragement there. I've had discouragement, Jim, off and on for the last 30 years. It just comes and goes all the time because, you know, kind of like Elijah, you know, he did all those miracles, and then what happened? He goes out in the desert and sits down under Gordon's bomb, you know?
Exactly.
If the prophets of God can have their downs, I guess the rest of us can too. But yeah, it's strange to try to describe this, but I think almost every album that I've ever made in my entire life, after I get done with it, I'm second guessing it as it's going off to the planet. It's too late to change it now, you know, and you upload it to the internet, it's gone. I mean, it's out there. And just every album, artists are mental. There's not a secret. And yeah, I get bummed after almost every album I've ever done. Even if I'm totally excited and I'm pretty sure a lot of people are going to like it, there's just always some undone thing that you're always worrying about, you know, and maybe you have hopes and dreams and things you were hoping that the album would accomplish, and you're always, you know, there's always something that's not turning out as good as you think, but you just, you know, it's just like playing a baseball game. You figure you're going to get 4 at-bats and try to get a couple of hits if you can.
Right. Would you say that, you know, based upon what you had just stated, always feeling like something was not right or something, did you or have you come to the conclusion that it's spiritual warfare? Because, for example, the songs that we're going to play on this show, you know, some of them are very, very, very self-explanatory. And I think we can both agree that when we glorify and edify our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, that there is an enemy out there that really, truly wants to come and steal, kill, and destroy from us. So I'm quite certain as an artist and as a Christian man that you have internalized that that's spiritual warfare.
Oh, yeah. But there's both aspects when you're a Christian. Because even non-Christian artists, every time they finish an album and it's going off to the record plant, they're second-guessing it in their mind. They're wondering if people are going to like it. Even though it wasn't Christian music, they're wondering, is my music going to touch anybody? Did I just waste my time? Is anybody ever going to care? You go through all these mental thoughts. And the Christian has all of that, but you also do get spiritual warfare. The enemy will bring you down just through those regular thoughts that non-Christian artists get, if he can get you to do that, and if not, he'll attack you in some other way. But you know, we've been attacked so many times over the decades, and you know, like I say, there's high moments and low moments, just like it's anything else. You know, Christians, we're on our way to a different destination than the rest of the world, but a lot of things are still the same. But yeah, well, there's definitely sometimes the attacks, the spiritual attacks, are more obvious. And sometimes you don't even know them at first, and you'll find yourself in a situation, and all of a sudden it hits you. Hey, wait a minute, this is odd. You know, this is not a normal thing that's happening to us here. And, you know, it comes to me from every direction. But, yeah, certainly we've had loads and loads of spiritual attacks.
Bill, there's a song I'd like to play right now. The title of this song is called Christ Died. Now, as a believer, to me, that is a very self-explanatory song. However, would you mind giving the listeners that maybe perhaps don't know who the Lord is on what this song means and the importance of Christ dying?
Well, Christ dying, the fact that he lived a perfect life because he didn't have a human father, he can do that. It's not hocus pocus. It's not magic. It's not like believing in Santa Claus. There's explainable reasons why he could do that, and no other human being that's ever lived can. And the fact that he came here to lay his life down for us, that's our justification there, that he accomplished on a wooden cross quite a few years ago. And that's why Christ had to die. And as I point out in the song also, you know, like Paul said, if Christ is not raised, we're, of all men, most miserable. And I point out in the song that he also raised. And that's why we get raised eventually if we believe in him, because he was raised. And, you know, actually a little side story here. This, it's funny you bring that song up right now, because that's the lead-off batter for the seventh Project Power, that opening track from the first album. And, you know, Robert was commissioned by Retroactive to do the drums on it, you know, and we did a deal with him. And this is when Stryper was first getting back together. And they were doing a lot of short legs of tours. He'd be out of town. He'd come back in and he'd say, oh, man, I'm going to be here for 2 weeks, you know, when I get back, and we'll get that album done. And, you know, he had a lot of stuff going on and everything. And he'd come back into town and he called me about 2 days before he's getting ready. He says, man, I can't do it. You know, just a bunch of things happened, blah, blah, blah. I was, all right. You know, I was a little down. I was really ready. I was up and ready to do it. Had the drum set all tacked for weeks, just sitting there waiting, ready to track. But about a month later, he comes back into town. He's, man, I'm only going to be here for a week, and I got some things to do with my family. I don't think I can do it. He says, I'll come back again. Well, I got about 3 extra months that I wasn't planning on having before we started working on this, probably from around September to, it was right after, I remember Stryper ended that last leg of a tour at the House of Blues here in Vegas, and he says, all right, he says, you know, give me a couple of days to get kind of relaxed and rested up from being on tour, and we'll come over and do it. Well, during this 3 months, I had had a conversation with Matt Hunt from Retroactive, and he was just saying, hey, you know, is Robert done the tunes yet? And so we just got this chatting about things, and he threw out this one really nice compliment. He was talking about, hey, I love this other album you did for me, you know, it worked good. This other album here got good reviews, this other album, a lot of people like it. He throws out this line. He says, Bill, I'll always put out whatever you make. I'll always put it out, you know. And I said, oh, hey, thanks, man, that's really nice of you to say that. And it was one of those, it's almost funny. You probably heard that cliched line when somebody says tomorrow, and it echoes tomorrow, 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 like John Paul Jones in The Song Remains the Same movie. Hey, this is tomorrow, tomorrow. And all I could hear, Jim, for a couple of months was, I'll always put everything out that you make. And I started getting freaked out about it. I thought, wait a minute, how do I know I'm even going to be alive in a month? You know, I mean, I know he means it well, but really God's in charge, and tomorrow isn't promised. And I started freaking out about it, and God really started working on me, and I started looking at the lyrics on my album, the opening, the first album for The Seventh Power. And I said, you know what? What if this is my last album before I die? If this is my last album, these lyrics are weak. And I started, quote unquote, getting songs saved. You know, they just weren't really good Christian songs. The message was too buried, and I thought, nobody's ever going to get anything out of this. I'm not going to leave it to that chance. And I started rewriting the lyrics. And the longer that Robert put off, I just kept rewriting tunes. And I didn't get them all rewritten, but probably everything except for 2 or 3 of them. And when I got it to that point, he started tracking. I thought, okay, cool, you know. The album came out really good, and that song, it was going to be the last track on the album. I ended up moving it up to the first spot, and I thought, you know, this song is going to be everything that The Seventh Power is about. Christ died, and now he has been raised. I mean, that's the calling card for the whole project right there.
Well, it's a great song, man, and I'm going to tell you what. Let's go ahead and let the listeners hear. Christ Died with Bill Menchum on Power Rock Podcast. Crank it up. back. We are with Bill Mencham. And man, brother, powerful, powerful tune, my friend.
Hey, thanks a lot, man.
You got it, buddy. Bill, let me ask you this, man. What do you think, as a whole, the music industry? Now, you've been in this business a long time, and you've seen a... I'd like to get your views on what you may have as far as a positive side of the music scene and the downfall side of a music scene, of the music scene. What's your thoughts on that? I mean, I'm sure that you have, you know, thoughts running through your head about the music scene today. So what do you got on that one?
Well, so many decades have come and gone. I guess I could give you a whole treatise on probably the 70s, 80s, 90s, thousands and beyond. But, you know, it's been a lot of stuff happen. I think every genre, every decade pretty much is kind of like a genre and at least an era of rock music. And I think there's a lot of good probably in every one of them. I guess I'll go ahead and just be honest. I wasn't really thrilled with the 90s. I'm all for trying things that are new, but really it became, they outlawed it and it became a crime to, it seemed like, to play a really smoking hot lead lick or a really kicking double kick drum lick or anything. And, you know, the excess of the 80s did bother me to a certain extent at the end. There's a lot of groups that I didn't like. I'm not one of them guys that just loves everything 80s. Actually, I was really a 70s kid more than anything. So there was a lot of, like I say, the 90s got more honest. They stripped away all the drum machines and the triggers and the samples and all that stuff and just played straight ahead music. But it was so stripped down. It was like, it just seemed like it was a sin or it was nationally illegal to play a smoking hot lead lick. You know, I got very little out of the 90s. After that, it just seemed like the music industry kind of didn't recover from that. It's kind of like almost like the industry said, you know, we've had so many decades from the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and it's kind of like after 2000, it almost seemed like the whole business said, what are we going to do now? You know, it's like they didn't have an idea, and it just... people started combining other styles as a lack of stuff to do, I kind of think. Now you've got things called alternative metal. You know, we used to have metal, we used to have alternative. Now I got alternative metal. I mean, it's just, there's so many offshoots. It's kind of cool. Kind of isn't. I think people always want all this equality stuff. I think there's actually, and this kind of goes, a lot of this is kind of in sports too. I think it's good to have a reigning king of some sort. You would think, yeah, but all the rest of the competition doesn't have a chance. It doesn't matter. When you have a whole genre of something happening, whether it's auto racing or motorcycle racing or heavy metal or rock and roll, yeah, there's a lot of fodder out there, people that are just being used as cannon fodder, but we love the king, whoever it is. If it's Elvis, he smoked everybody else and was okay because we love the other groups too, but he was outrageous. You know, the Beatles, they were just on another planet in another galaxy. Zeppelin just killed everybody. Every year they won the Reader's Polls for every instrument and album of the year and song. They were unstoppable for so long. And it's good for the business. When everything gets even if all the groups are equally talented, it looks like mediocrity. And that's why it's not good to not have a king of some sort.
Do you think that, as far as social media goes, you know, at least from my end of social media, I'm seeing a lot of people that are more, and again, this is just my personal opinion. I'd like to get your opinion on it. I mean, I know you said that the 90s was a little, you weren't feeling the 90s, but do you feel, or gosh, I don't want to put words in your mouth. In my opinion, the 80s, it seems like today, everybody is still stuck in that 80s type of genre, that melodic type of, or hard rock as we once defined it. Would you agree to that to some degree or what? I mean, I guess really what I'm trying to say is this, Bill, is that I'm finding today that a lot of people are really just not willing to accept change.
People being able to accept change, I don't know. If it's the change issue so much, I know that I look at things kind of like this. you know, if I keep playing the way that I keep playing, it's not because I hate change. It's because I explored so many different kinds of licks, so many different kinds of chord patterns, so many types of wood for guitar, so many different types of amps, amp mods, everything. You know, when I finally, after a few decades of that stuff goes by, you know, you start to learn what you like and what you don't like, what your strong points are and your weak points are. And if you're an experienced musician, it's not that you're stuck in a rut. You finally figured out all the things that you do best or the things that you enjoy best. And you put it all together, and you kind of arrive at some point, you know. That's kind of one way I look at it. And as far as a lot of people, when you say a lot of people are, there's certain types of musicians that are just stuck in the 80s. And, you know, it took me a long time, actually, believe it or not, you know, in 1980 I was 20. So when we get into the 80s, see, I was having a hard time when 80s, quote-unquote 80s metal guitar playing started to really take shape around the mid-80s, I was having a hard time with it. I mean, a lot of people will look at me and say, oh, you're just stuck in the 80s. No, man, I'm stuck in the 70s. I didn't like the 80s. And a friend of mine turned me on to an internet article I read about 6 months ago, and it was a guy, he's a musician and a columnist, and he was talking about the problem with rock music. He said in the 80s, rock and roll lost the blues, and it changed everything from that point on. And you know, as much as I love Randy Rhoads, he may have had something to do with it, because he was a bluesy 70s guitar player. But you know, on Diary of a Madman, he started getting into other types of stuff that, you know, like Over the Mountain doesn't have really any blues influence in it at all. And he might have started taking music in that direction. I don't think he was... he was so humble, I don't think he ever thought he was going to change the music industry, but I think it took a few years from the influence of Randy and Eddie Van Halen to really influence the rest of the industry, and that's why by the mid-80s you start to see quote-unquote 80s metal start to take shape. They finally figured out what Eddie and Randy had been doing for a long time.
Bill, the next track I want to talk about is called Majesty on High. How about some information, or how about some insight on that tune?
You know, it's another one of self-explanatory tunes, but I'll explain it anyways, just to get a few details on it. You know, it's kind of a praise song in one sense. You know, when you're singing, you know, those lines, you sat down at Majesty on High, I got to say, when I was putting the chorus lines for that together, and it's another one of them tunes where I just quoted a bunch of scripture because it's the most powerful thing on earth. And, you know, it's one of those tunes when I threw it together, it just worked. And I just remember some of the lines just feeling so great. The way that I phrased majesty on high, it was the most noble thing I could have ever said about our Lord and Savior, I think, right there.
And I'm going to tell you what, let's go ahead and let the listeners hear Majesty on High. I'm Power Rock Podcast.
Do you believe in him? Would you receive him? Do you want to know him? Can I tell you about him? His victory, the finest hour, cloud received him out of sight. All things held by the word of his power, he sat down with majesty on high. sees him. They wail because of him. He brings his reward with him. All power is given him.
And again, we are back with Bill. Bill, thanks, man, for that heads up on that tune, man. It's a all-around great song, and you definitely you put the icing on the cake with that by the way you had explained it, and I thank you, brother.
All right, thanks, man.
Bill, what would you suggest to someone who is upcoming in the music industry today? You know, what kind of words of wisdom or advice would you want to give young artists today that are trying to get into the rock and roll genre? And what would you tell them if you, you know, if you were sitting in a group of guys and you'd say, okay, if they asked you this question, what would it be? How would you, what words of inspiration would you use for them? Or would you discourage them from the whole thing?
Well, yeah, that's right on. I know you're just... Yeah, oh yeah, I know what you mean too. That's you're not kidding there. You're dead on with there. Sometimes it's better to leave well enough alone. But you know, I think if you're a Christian artist, I mean, you really have to determine for yourself, what are you going to do it for? Are you just a person who likes music and you want to go out and have some fun, or does you think you feel like you're called that it has to be a mission of some sort? Both of those are valid. You know, I used to have to be critical. I didn't say things out loud, just in my mind, really. I used to be critical of some Christian artists that don't really put their lyrics really straightforward, and I've always felt that it was the best way to do it. But in one sense, over the years, I've had a bit of a change of heart on that. If some Christians don't really feel, quote-unquote, called to really, you know, make their music evangelical, if they're really not called to that in a ministry sort of way, then don't do it. Don't fake it. Just sing songs about hamburgers and hot dogs and Chevys and whatever else you want to talk about. There's nothing worse than people that, and we had some of this in the 80s. Anybody who was a musician and got saved automatically thought they were quote-unquote called to ministry. They got real religious, and it really stunk. There was a lot of that going on. I'm probably guilty of a little bit of it here and there. You know, if people don't really feel like they have to sing songs where the lyrics are structured, like the Seventh Power and some of my other groups, then don't, you know. And I think it's valid. If Christians just want to go out and have fun and play music, that's fine. You know, it doesn't have to be a ministry. But, I mean, you know, if you call yourself a serious Christian, I guess, you know, whether you're going to call it a ministry or not, you know, you're an ambassador of Christ, whether you want to be or not, all the time. If you're at the bike shop or the movie theater or wherever you are, you know, you're always an ambassador of Christ, whether you want to be or not. But it still doesn't mean you have to have a ministry band with straight-ahead lyrics like Striper and the Seventh Power or whatever. But, I've eased up my opinion of a lot of groups that don't really put it out there front, because, you know, if it's really not in their heart, if they don't absolutely have to, then maybe they shouldn't be. You know, but as far as if you just want to make music for fun or whatever, one of my, just from all groups, Christian and non-groups, well, I would say to people, don't get caught up in trends unless you're willing to follow them and continually be changing and reinventing yourself every 6 months for the rest of your life. There were some times where we dressed a certain way and put makeup on or whatever we did. We were doing what we were, quote-unquote, supposed to be doing at that point in time. And, you know, and then things changed two or three years later, and I just remember, even lately, it's funny we're talking about this, because even just over the last few months, I've been kind of looking back at my whole, you know, career in music, and I think, you know, there's just some times when I cringe. I'm just looking at old, bad photographs where we didn't know how to put on makeup and stuff, but just even the sound and things we were following, in one sense, I wish I could go back and do it all over again. I would be me right from the start, and I would never apologize for it, no matter how much people threw rocks at it.
Bill, the next track I'd like to talk about is called Wings as an Eagle. How about some history on that one?
You know, that's it's very kind of bizarre that you would ask me about that. I was, matter of fact, I heard this song just a few weeks ago. I don't usually sit around and listen to my albums all the time, but for some reason I heard that track, and, you know, I was putting that album together, and I had Robert Sweet on almost enough tracks to do the album. It was one of those things, that album's kind of a compilation. Some of the drum tracks come from various different places, and you know, it wasn't a planned out album like the other three Seventh Power albums were, where you know I had a full complement of tunes ready to go, and you know, Robert was hired and he came in and knocked out all the drums in certain sessions. I kind of patchworked that album together from different sessions over probably about a year or so's time, and I had almost enough to really fill out enough time to make it a full album. I needed just a little bit more, and Robert at some point had come by my house, and I said, I don't know why he came by, but I asked him, hey, I'm tweaking some of my mic positioning and my snare tuning and stuff. Can I have you just play like a couple of minutes real quick on some rough guitar that I've got thrown down on tape? Oh, yeah, sure, no problem, you know. He goes in there, sits down, and he busts out the drum track that you hear on that album. I said, okay, thanks. See you later. And later I was trying to use the track, but it was really short. I think it was like a minute 51 of the drums or something like that. And that's why the song starts with some mellow intro, and the album ends with the mellow outro, just to get the song up to length. And that's how that thing started. And as you can see, I took lyrics again out of the Old Testament at that time, Wings as Eagles, and I kind of thought it was I've always liked that passage of scripture, just using that to mount up as wings of eagles. You know, it just seems so majestic and everything. It's like, you know, with lines like that, we should be the servants of the living God.
Well, here it is, man. Wings as Eagles with Bill Menchen on Power Rock Podcast. We are back with Bill. Bill, you know, like all these tunes, man, they're just wonderful, man. And that's why I had stated at the beginning of the interview, I'm so honored to have you, you know, on the show, because it kind of rejuvenates my spirit, if you will. And thank you for that, brother.
Hey, well, you're welcome. I'm just it's a privilege and an honor, really, to be part of anybody's spirit being rejuvenated. It's not something to be taken lightly.
Right on.
It's a miracle. Yeah.
Would you say that you and Robert have a really good chemistry? I mean, when you guys sit down to go and lay tracks and...
Him and I have this this pulsation groove that's kind of built into us, and I think a lot of it might come from Led Zeppelin. Him and I are the same age. I remember some years back, he was in a recording project with a guy that used to be Jason Bonham's singer, and he got done with the tunes that he was recording for the guy, and the guy says, man, he says, I want to tell you, you're a great drummer. And he says, you know what? Jason is a great drummer, but you sound more like his dad than he does. And I've noticed that over the years that he does, even just the way he hits his hi-hat, he's got this kind of this John Bonham sort of a pace or a plod to it. And he's really heavy. He's really pulsating and rhythmic more than most drummers. He just doesn't play very much, many beats on any album that don't have some kind of a really good groove rock to them. And the funny thing is, I'm a guitar player. You know, I'm not an industrial guitar player or a hardcore guitar player. I'm still a melodic guitar player, but having that said, the part that's weird about me is the rhythms sometimes are almost more important than the notes and the chords. And my music, I couldn't have planned it out this way. I think Robert and I were just born for each other in one sense, at least in the rhythm sense, because, you know, I've never written music for him like that. It's just always the way that I played. In the first album that he ever did of mine, was right before the first Seventh Power album, it was Final Acts, The Acts of the Apostles. And a lot of, that's back when I was on MySpace, and I remember a ton of people, when that album first came out, messaging me on MySpace and posting on my MySpace page. They were just shocked. They hadn't heard Robert play like that before. And I was kind of honored to really get all this killer drumming. You know, in the 80s, things were candy-coated, and Robert's kind of frustrated on some of the Stryker albums that were more polished and glammy and almost femme in a way. And I think he's gotten kind of a bad rap. You know, they used to call him the effeminate Robert Sweet in magazines and stuff. He's really taken a lot of heat. But you know what people don't know? They see the pretty boy and the makeup and stuff on the stage from back in the 80s. But what they don't know is he is one of the most brutal, hard-hitting, stick-breaking, rim-bending drummers you'll ever hear. And but at the same time, it's not just all about power. He's got killer groove. He's a great hitter, and he makes me sound like a good studio technician, better than I am, just because he hits his snare so great.
Any chances of any live performances in the near future, or any plans for that?
You know, if I have anything on a downer note to say, and it's just, you know, just this is part of life. You know, I've been a mechanic since 1978. I've got a lot of jacked up parts on my body. I've broken 9 bones over my lifetime. I mean, I've lived a great life. I've had a lot of exciting adventures. I've been playing various different musical instruments almost my whole life, and I've got a lot. I've got a real bad left tennis elbow, right rotator cuff, back is trash, knees, arthritic hands. Probably not going to do much more playing from this point on out, even in the studio. It's very difficult for me to play these days.
Bill, I want to ask you one more question, and then we're going to go ahead and close the show out, man. And it's this. What type of legacy would you like to leave your friends, family, and fans as an artist in your walk with God? You know, what is it that you want people to remember you by?
Well, it is music. And if you didn't have music, basically, you would just be down on the strip handing out gospel tracts. But if you're going to connect music to what you have to say, then music is important, but the message is important, too. And, you know, I hope I gave people some good licks and some interesting recordings and things that they can enjoy and get their minds around and rock to. But also, you know, for the Christian out there, I'm really hoping that they'll be built up in their faith feel more positive about being a Christian. You know, the world's getting darker every day, and nobody's noticed out there. And it's easy for Christians to get down, feel trodden, feel like they're never going to make a difference. But, you know, every little thing that anybody can do, you know, that if you just open yourself up to the Lord, the Lord's going to use anybody. They'll make themselves available. And, you know, I lift the Lord up as good as I could in my music, and I try to make some good tunes with a great, the best message of all time that you could get. And, you know, I'm open to Christian people. I hope they're built up, and it helps. My music has helped them somehow on their way to their final destination to be with the Lord. And for people who aren't a Christian, you know, I'm not a big Bible-pounding, religious zealot, knucklehead. I just happened to stumble across the creator of the universe, and I'm just trying to let other people know about him.
Amen, brother. Well, Bill, I want to tell you once again that I am truly honored and humbled to have had this opportunity to speak with you, man. And I just want to say that, brother, I wish you the utmost success. Whether the Lord chooses to put your career behind you or it takes off, you know, I just want to wish you the utmost success in all that you do, man. And again, man, I just thank you so much for this opportunity.
Well, thank you, Jim. And you know, I'm honored that, and I'm just so grateful that any time, you know, I've been able to contribute 1 ounce of anything positive to somebody's life. And when I say positive, I'm just not good feelings, but something that'll last forever. And anytime somebody at all wants to interview me, like you did here today, you know, I truly am grateful that for anybody that wants to talk to me and cares one whit about anything I've done. It's really a privilege, and I never stop remembering that.
Well, thank you, sir. Well, there you have it, an interview with Bill Menchen on Power Rock Podcast. I am your host, Jim Madonna. We're going to go ahead and play one more song from Bill. This one here is called The Clouds. Peace.
Do you believe?